going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thanks, Capital. It is Going Deep Podcast, and on this episode, we're going deep on all things UFC, which might seem a bit odd coming from me, but I do love some good mixed martial arts, and I do love the fact that Sportsnet is the home for the UFC here in Canada. We are the English language home for UFC fight night cards, pay-per-view prelims, and we'll feature a slate of marquee UFC programming. Well, you're already seeing some of that pop up on our platforms and, of course, on Sportsnet Plus, because everything in 2024 is about streaming and everything is about content and characters and personality, and the UFC has that in spades. We actually, along with the deal of signing a partnership with the UFC, it comes back to Sportsnet. We also bring back, for me, a former teammate in Aaron Bronstedt, or someone who we're going to talk to on this episode. He did a great job covering the UFC for TSN. Now he's doing that very same thing for us. You can actually find a sit-down interview with him and Dana White on our platforms right now. Look into the bio of this for a link to that chat and a chat that Tim McAuliffe did with Dana White. But there is so much to talk about when it comes to UFC, and when it comes to the UFC coming back to Canada, which is what we have this weekend for UFC 297 in Toronto. There's lots of hype around that fight and Mike Mallott fighting in Canada. Can he be a household name? Remember in Vancouver, Canadians went 7-0 on the card just after the pandemic. And love to see the momentum continue to build for fighting in this country and really how international sport is going, fighting around the world. I'm looking forward to UFC 300 because it's a huge card. There's also the first ever Chinese versus Chinese title fight in Zhang versus Yan. So we've got lots of different potential stories to focus on, whether it's 297 and beyond. And of course, the notorious one, Conor McGregor, stating that he will fight an international fight week. What does that mean for UFC 300? What's the momentum and buzz for UFC 297? No better people to ask than two proud Canadians who have done a great job furthering and legitimizing the sport with the level of dedication with their journalistic coverage, not just fanboys. And that would be Ariel Helwani, who we are going to talk to coming up. Lots to talk to him about because he is a lover of New York Knicks basketball, Buffalo Bills football, and the fight game. So we'll see where that stream of consciousness goes later in this hour. But first, my new teammate who was a teammate before, Aaron Bronstedt. We worked together at The Score. Now we're reunited and it feels so good. Let's listen to and learn from Sportsnet's MMA host, Aaron Bronstedt, as we go deep on UFC 297 in the T-Dot. So as I mentioned, another one has come back to the nest. You can only stay away for so far, and you know the Score Mafia that is all across the industry once again congregates together. Aaron Bronstedt is part of our coverage here at Sportsnet, as we are the English language Canadian home for UFC fight night cards, pay-per-view prelims, and lots of programming, which Aaron will not only be in but will be a driver for. Bronstedt, welcome. Thanks for strengthening our team and our coverage. My first question is, when you look at all the different platforms that the sport it has been covered in this country, and you've been a big part of that, will continue to be, what jumps out to you in terms of where we are now with coverage in comparison to, when the Fertitta family was just starting to grow this thing?
Well, I mean, it's changed so dramatically. And it's not just about the UFC when they started things, but like the overall landscape has so many different arms now. It's like an octopus. You've got your podcasting, you've got your social media, you've got TV, radio, all of the different video platforms. YouTube is its own beast. I mean, it's crazy how many different ways you can cover things. And back then it was like, first off, when they started it, it was basically, you know, coined as like human cockfighting, and John McCain was trying to shut it down. And to see where it's come from there in just 30 years is like, it's mind boggling to see how many different hurdles they were able to overcome to make this really a mainstream sport. Like I was on with our old pal Sid Sixero yesterday at Breakfast Television. They're showing guys throwing down in the crowd at a UFC event. Like that kind of thing would be pretty taboo, I would say, probably about 20, 25 years ago, especially to show on morning television, right? So I don't know if we've become desensitized to it because of the sporting nature of, I guess, what would be considered to be a violent sport. But, you know, I think that the times have changed so much since, I guess, the kind of medieval times or prehistoric ages of what was then the UFC.
You know, they've done a lot to, I don't want to say legitimize it, but bring it closer to the other major four sports in North America. Rights deals like this and understanding the value of it has come a long way. Other small things like, you know, having apparel and branding deals, you know, so you're not having fighters necessarily showing up in like the same sort of tight t-shirts that people were going to bars at in like the early 2000s. But I would argue that our country, Canada, and the popularity here did a lot for the growth of the UFC in the early days. Do you believe the popularity now in our country is as strong as it was in its height?
I feel like the popularity is as strong, but I'm not sure the hysteria is quite there. Like when Georges St. Pierre was doing his thing, we had a guy, right? And I talked about this yesterday when I was on the fan pregame. It's like the expectation for a lot of these Canadians is so high because it's not like when like there's an American fighter that's entering the UFC, they're not like, this guy's going to be the next John Jones, because there are so many American fighters. And for Brazilians, you can't say like, this guy's going to be the next Anderson Silva, because there are like over 100 Brazilians in the UFC. With Canadians, we've got like 10 to 20 Canadians in the UFC right now, right? So every single one of them is going to be compared ultimately to GSP, who is a top three fighter consensus to ever do it. And that's not really fair, right? Like, it's almost like in the early days with the NBA, like you have these great Canadian players and everybody's going to be like, who's the next Steve Nash? But Steve Nash wasn't like, I mean, he was a two-time MVP, I believe. But I don't think people would say that, you know, Steve Nash is like a top three all-time NBA player, right? So all these new Canadians that are coming into the NBA, they kind of have a chance to carve out their own legacy. Whereas in MMA, like we had George. First, we had Carlos Newton, actually. Carlos Newton is the first welterweight champion. And then we had George, who was the next Canadian welterweight champion. And then we had Rory McDonald, who competed for the championship, didn't quite get it, but got it over in Bellator. And now we've got a guy named Mike Malott, who's like this next welterweight. He's finishing all of his fights. He's on an absolute tear right now. And the expectations for him are so high. And he hasn't even fought a ranked opponent yet. He will this weekend at UFC 297. But You know, it's just interesting to see the kind of microscope that these Canadians are going to continue to be held under because of how quickly we had a Georges St. Pierre in really the early formative years of the sport.
Guilty as charged. Because in my notes, I have to ask you about Mike Malott fighting in Canada at UFC 297 in Toronto, hometown guy coming back. And I literally believe not only does he have to win, he has to win impressively. He has to win with a finish, as he often does. And I think he has the chance, if so, to, he's a obviously ranked and respected fighter, but become more of a household name in our country. End up being on the morning show the next day with B-roll of him and Sid asking you some question about how the proceedings went down. Do you think he has not only the ability, but let's be honest, part of it is the ability in terms of captivating audiences, the way, you know, someone like GSP was able to become a household name in our country?
Well, I think the ability is actually the question. Like, when you sit down and talk to this guy, he's got it. Like, he's got charisma. He's clean cut, no tattoos, gentleman, a true, like, sportsman, very similar to GSP. But he's also fights, I think, in a lot more of an exciting fashion than GSP, but that also comes with a degree of risk. Like, I think the thing that made GSP so great is I think he's probably the most risk-averse fighter that we've seen ever in the UFC. He was just so smart about how to build his best winning conditions and capitalize on them. Mike Malott is also able to capitalize on openings. Like, he's really good at that. He's able to find openings and in that moment is able to go for the kill really quickly. George St. Pierre wasn't really about that. He was kind of slow, methodical, pick you apart. Whereas Mike, he's also methodical, but in a different way. Whereas he's really good at finding an opening. But as a result of that, you have to take bigger risks in order to get those finishes. And I think that that is what makes him a more exciting fighter, but might also end up being what limits him down the road. So that's, I guess, what we have to see is how much are we going to be able to see? And not to mention, I think a lot of the things that people forget about with George St. Pierre is when he basically took that hiatus after he beat Johnny Hendricks, it was like a 4 or 5 year hiatus before he came back and fought Michael Bisping and then ultimately didn't fight again. He was really young. Like, he had already run through the division and was like 31 or 32 years of age. And that's around the age that Mike Malott is now. So I think that's one of the things people kind of forget about George is, like, he had a lot of time to build that resume. Mike Malott, I don't think, has that same luxury. He took 4 years off of the sport just because he felt burnt out and then kind of came back to it and has really had a renewed spirit about the sport, kind of had transitioned to coaching, actually, and now has come back as a fighter. And I think that as a result of that, he's a lot smarter and a lot better of a fighter. But I think that also has a bit more of a shelf life for him.
You mentioned all the Canadians in the NBA, you know, the trickle-down effect of, you know, the Steve Nash effect, if you will. You know, I think in our lifetime, for me, the greatest Canadian athletes are, you know, GSP on the men's side and Christine Sinclair on the women's side, who recently retired. I think Christine Sinclair's legacy above and beyond, you know, being the greatest female goal scorer, is all of the young female girls who came into the national program inspired by her. Do you see a wake coming inspired by GSP, if not in Canada, at least in Quebec, in Montreal? And if not, why do you think that is?
Well, I do play-by-play for a promotion called Unified MMA, which is the biggest promotion regionally in Canada. And we're starting to see that wave happen. But I think that one of the big impediments was the pandemic. The pandemic basically shut down the entire Canadian regional scene for like 2 years. And a lot of the fighters that were starting to come up before the pandemic didn't really have a place where they could hone their craft. You know, some of them went stateside and were able to compete there. Like Jasmine Jazz DeVicious, who's on this weekend's card, went and fought over at CFFC, which is like a regional promotion in the New Jersey, you know, Philadelphia area. And she was able to do well there. But a lot of the other Canadians have full-time jobs on top of competing. You know, the regional scene, you're making $800, $1,200 to compete. So you obviously can't do that as a full-time job. And as a result of that, a lot of people were unable to go and compete for like 2 or 3 years. Like, we're seeing on Unified, they just added a guy named Zach Powell to the card. And he's one of the best prospects in Canada and hasn't fought in 3 years because fights fall through, the pandemic happens. All of these different things are, you know, slowing the train down. And I think that right now, the wake is coming. Like, I don't think that we're in the wake. Like, I think we can kind of see it a couple miles in the ocean from here. But I don't think that it's coming just yet.
You mentioned the pandemic. You know, one of the things that people were excited for and people thought, okay, we're back, was, you know, the card in Vancouver where Canadians, you know, went 7-0. There was such an excitement and a demand, you know, to see anything at the time. How do you compare that to UFC 297 in Toronto? What's it look like in terms of demand and people wanting to be at the event, but also be at all of the other, you know, UFC economy events that are going to take place around it?
Well, yeah, that was kind of like the West Coast welcome back. Now this is the East Coast welcome back. And historically, the crowds in Toronto have been amazing for the UFC. So I think we're going to see actually probably an even louder and better crowd than we did in Vancouver. I mean, that is, if the house is sold out, I think it's going to set a gate record, no problem. But it's prohibitively expensive to get in. Like, I think the cheapest ticket to get in is like $400, right? So, you know, the demand, I think, is there, but the card, I don't think, matches that demand. Like, on paper, this isn't the most stacked card that the UFC's put together. You look at what they've got for UFC 299 in March. It's just a stacked card. This card, I think, leaves much to be desired, but it is going to showcase a lot of the Canadian talent. And also, I think the UFC brand is so strong that people are going to come to the event regardless of who's on it, just because they want to experience a UFC event. There hasn't been one here in 5 years, not to mention that the pandemic, because the UFC kept going through the pandemic, drew a lot of new fans. Sports betting had become legalized. It was like this perfect storm of, you know, people want to bet on sports. There's no sports going on. The UFC's holding events, and then people are starting to watch the UFC, and they get hooked on it. And I think that's really what it comes down to for the UFC and new viewership is, like, once people watch one event, especially with the sports betting involved, like, it's such a great sports betting sport, because it's like a 15-minute max fight. And then if you lose, you can claw your way back by the end of the card. If you win, you can continue your momentum throughout the card. It's just a great sport in that regard. And I think that a lot of people that are getting into the sports gambling space are going to become UFC fans for that reason.
You know, you talked about how stacked, you know, 299 is. I look ahead and I look at UFC 300, and I find that one a real interesting one, just because of the Chinese versus Chinese title fight aspect of Zhan versus Yan. It's amazing to me, because you don't often find sports that are really beloved in North America and really strong internationally. Sometimes they're often either or. UFC is in that place where they have both. What have you noticed about the growth of international, both attention, but international title contenders in the sport?
Well, it's pretty incredible how a lot of these different countries have come on. Like you mentioned, not only is this the first Chinese versus Chinese title fight in UFC history, it's the first Chinese versus Chinese women's fight in UFC history, and it's like the third Chinese versus Chinese fight in UFC history, period. So it's like pretty historic from that standpoint alone. But to see just two contenders in the same division from China, I think overall there have been like under 20 Chinese fighters in UFC history, something along those lines, like not a big number. And I saw this week somebody posted that the most Mexicans in UFC history are currently in the promotion with 20. Last year, there was a time where there was a chance for there to be four different Mexican champions in the UFC. You had Brandon Moreno in flyweight. You had Irene Aldana, who fought Amanda Nunes last year. You have Alexa Grasso, who's the current flyweight champion. And you had Yair Rodriguez, who was the interim champion last year at featherweight. Like, so there were less than 20 Mexican fighters in the UFC, and like four of them were either a champion or on the cusp of becoming a champion in the same like 5-6 month span, which is just a remarkable accomplishment for Mexican fighters. And you see the lineage of Mexican fighters in boxing and how big that has always been. That's starting to move over and trend towards mixed martial arts now. So that's a really cool thing to see as well, is just we're seeing all of these new countries come about with talent. Kazakhstan is starting to have a lot of really great fighters come up right now. You know, Canada, we just happened to get in really early with George St. Pierre and hit lightning in a bottle. But now we're starting to see a lot of these other countries start to pick up as well. Like China didn't have, you know, Chinese fighters in the UFC back in the day, like they were basically like the fighters that would come in to lose. And now we're starting to see Chinese champions, Chinese contenders get built up, which is just really cool to see.
We've seen fighters from the UK for a long time. The most famous one, or infamous maybe, Conor McGregor, stated that he's going to be fighting at International Fight Week. What does that mean? And will there be potentially a ripple effect in terms of what UFC 300 looks like because of it?
Well, I'll correct you before our listeners do, but Ireland is not in the UK, and you'll get some really angry people that will call you on that. But the UK is doing well right now. We've got Leon Edwards, who was born in Jamaica, immigrated with his family to the UK, and he's the champion now in the welterweight division, which is a totally stacked division. But that market, I think, is doing really well, too, because they've got the interim heavyweight champion in Tom Aspinall. He trains in Liverpool, and we're starting to see a lot of fighters from the UK and Ireland, like Ian Gary is coming up right now in the welterweight division. So that region is really booming. And what Conor did for all of Europe, really, and putting Europe on the map as like a global superstar in the sport, I mean, that can't be understated. You look at boxing and what Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua are doing right now for, the UK as well. I think that Conor McGregor had a very similar effect in the UFC on that region.
I love that you mentioned Tom Aspinall, because I need to know, is John Jones ducking him?
So this is a very complex question. The short answer is yes. But okay. I think the long answer is a little bit more, it has, again, a bit more nuance to it. So John was supposed to fight Stipe Miocic last year, the last event of the year. He got injured. John rarely gets injured, so, you know, it's not often that he pulls out of a fight. But, you know, it's a legacy fight. He's the greatest of all time. Stipe is the greatest heavyweight of all time. John Jones has moved to heavyweight, become the champion, had this great performance. But you know, legacy is really important to John, and he's always talked about how important legacy is. And I think that he's a lot more willing to take the risk of hurting his legacy against a 42-year-old Stipe Miocic than he is against a young upstart like Tom Aspinall. And, you know, John's kind of jawing back at him and telling him to earn his respect. But at the same time, if you're not going to fight the guy, I mean, maybe give the guy a break. He is the interim champion. The way that this whole system is supposed to play out, we've had rare exceptions like George St. Pierre fighting Michael Bisping while Robert Whittaker was the interim champion. But the way that an interim championship works is like you're the next guy in line, right? So if John gets injured and it's delaying things and now we have an interim champion, history would dictate most of the time that the champion would face the interim champion next. But Dana White has committed to Stipe Miocic being next in line. And really, it's easy to explain. If you're the UFC and John Jones says, this is the only guy I'm fighting or I'm walking away, I'm the greatest of all time right now, I don't have anything to lose by walking away, so let me fight Stipe instead of Tom Aspinall, the UFC are going to be like, well, we've got a big box office draw. It's going to be the last hurrah for John Jones. All signs are pointing to him retiring after that fight. So let's like capitalize on this. We're a fight promotion. We're not a sports league. We don't have to play by the same rules as everybody else in terms of how championships and standings work. It's not like the NBA can be like, you know what, LeBron and the Lakers would make a good fit for the finals. Let's do that, right? The UFC is they're a sports promotion. They're not a sporting league. So they don't necessarily have to have the interim champion face the champion next.
Raptors fans would argue that the NBA would say LeBron would be a good fit for the finals, but no question. I mean, I love that you bring up that distinction, because even though UFC is much more mainstream and in conversation along those other leagues, there is a clear difference. You know, that difference for some was a bit blurred in terms of anti-doping in the program, which has relatively gone smooth, but I would argue that the relationship with USADA was less than smooth. From your intel and reporting, where is the anti-doping program and where do you think it might go in the future?
So it's interesting. The UFC ended the partnership with USADA, and that ended, two weeks ago, for all intents and purposes. Like, in the new year, they started their own anti-doping program. So basically what they did was they took all of the different elements from USADA that they liked and they kept them. And they kind of branched it out into like a triple prong sort of thing. I don't think it's going to have the same sort of independence as USADA had. But at the same time, a lot of the independence that USADA had was kind of undermined over time and eroded over time. And people would argue that, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of independence and necessarily transparency in the USADA program. So what the UFC are doing now is they're working with Drug Clean International, I believe it's called. It's the same anti-doping agency that's used by the major sports leagues, MLB, NBA, NCAA, and that's just from a collection standpoint. So I think it's called Drug Free America. So Drug Free America, which is also a global program, they're going to be the collection agency for the blood samples, urine samples, et cetera. Then they're going to use Smyrtle Labs, which is a lab that they used under the USADA program, which is a world-class anti-doping lab that gives you really the most in-depth results, and you can do all kinds of different testing for over time. It's like Olympic style testing that they use for Smyrtle Labs, and they've partnered with Smyrtle Labs to take the samples and then run the samples through their labs and do the analysis. And then they've got a guy named George Pirro who they hired, who worked for the FBI. I think he ran the FBI's like Florida Bureau or something along those lines, and was like the chief interrogator for Saddam Hussein or something like that, like these crazy credentials. And he's going to kind of be overseeing the program. And, you know, it's not really autonomously, though. That's kind of the problem with this new anti-doping program, is that they're still going to be doing anti-doping, but a lot of the things that they had from the last program, they've kind of kept, and some of the other things they've kind of either tweaked or gotten rid of altogether. And I think I had a lot of problems with some of the things that they did under the USADA program that they're still kind of doing now. Like, they're still doing random testing where they can wake people up in the night and test them, although I think that they're trying to change that so that they don't make it as kind of draconian as the last program was. But at the same time, if you give parameters for when you're going to be testing people, that allows people the opportunity to game the system, right? So I think it's really one of those things that we have to look at a year or two from now before we can really give a true opinion of how they're doing it. But it looks like they're going to have a very similar program to what they had with USADA.
Well, as that evolves, we know you'll be covering it, and we're thankful you'll be covering it with us here at Sportsnet. And lastly, before I let you go, man, just so proud of you. You know, people who see you now as this you know, acclaimed, respected, you know, UFC and mixed martial arts journalist, having no idea how you got there and how you worked for it, and you know how you, along with me, were behind the glass playing air horn sounds for Tim and Sid on the Tim and Sid Uncut podcast before they had a radio show, and you know you were on off the record booking guests and producing for Landsberg, and now you know you're booking your own big time guests with your MMA coverage. Before I let you go, man, what are you looking forward to getting after helping us here with Sportsnet's coverage?
Well, I'll say the same for you before I answer that question. I mean, it's cool to see people that were kind of working behind the scenes recognize what, I guess, our strengths were at the time and convince people that we could utilize those strengths and make them into something bigger. Like, I think really when you have kind of a vision for where your career can go and you chase that vision, 90% of the time in this business, it doesn't work out for you. But if you're able to really stick with it and convince people and show people with your work, with your like nose to the grindstone attitude that you can do these things, and they put their faith in you and you end up, you know, knocking it out of the park, it looks good on them. So for us to kind of get these opportunities coming up, like, I think it really speaks to, you know, a level of perseverance that's difficult to achieve in any workplace, really, but in sports media, especially when it's such a small, especially in Canada, where there really aren't a whole lot of players. Like, it's a situation where we really showed people, you know, like, we didn't just say we could do something. We said we could do it, put in the work, and then showed them, which I think is, you know, a testament to a lot of the people that are in this industry with us. But to answer your next question, like, in terms of mixed martial arts coverage at Sportsnet, like, I'm so impressed so far in the, I mean, I'll peel back the curtain. I've been working at Sportsnet since December 1st officially. You know, I'm so impressed with how much of a well-oiled machine Sportsnet is and how invested they are in the UFC. And I think that if you read the press release from when they announced that I had been brought on by Sportsnet, I said that I believe that mixed martial arts can be the biggest sport in Canada. And, you know, the reason why I say that is not because I don't believe it, but that's the bar that I want to set, is that we can take mixed martial arts and with the resources that Sportsnet has and with the strength of what the UFC brings to the table particularly, but the sport as a whole, I think brings to the table as a, you know, a sports platform. I think that this is a sport that's just going to continue to grow exponentially over time. And I don't know if we even necessarily need that next GSP in Canada for that to happen. I just think we need to explain to people why this is a beautiful sport, what it is about the UFC and mixed martial arts that goes beyond fighting. Like I said yesterday, again, on that fan pregame, like, we need to help people peel back the layers of the onion. You know, like, first it's like two people fighting, it's violent. Then it's like, okay, why, you know, why is one person good at this and why is the other person good at that? And then once you get into it, you know, you peel back those layers of the onion, you really realize that this is a sport of artistry. It's human chess. It's, you know, real-time problem solving and strategy that you don't really see in other sports. You have to adjust so quickly on the fly. There are no timeouts. You know, you have to wait for the end of the round. You can't really, like, go back to the clipboard and say, okay, well, this is what they're doing. This is what we have to do. You know, if you take all of those different things and people start to recognize what goes into this sport, that's where I think the buy-in is going to be huge. But I think that people just need to give it a chance. And we're at a stage now where it's not like, oh, well, what's this kind of weird thing going on over there? It's now a sport that has that mainstream recognition. It's on ESPN. It's on Sportsnet. It's on big platforms. So I think that people need to just kind of understand what's going on in the cage. And I think that my job at Sportsnet is to help people do that, is to help people recognize the beauty and the artistry of the sport.
Well, you did that with us here today. So thank you. And enjoy 297 in Toronto. It's been a while for us to have something really excited for. I remember being backstage at the Mayweather-McGregor press conference at the Molson Amphitheater, it was called at the time. And at the time, I believe you were there, like, producing for the Titian. And now you'll be at 297 producing for yourself. So enjoy it. Try to enjoy it, but I know it's going to be a busy week and weekend for you. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks, Ben. Also, shout out Dan Fernandez, my producer. I do have a producer, right? I'm not doing it all on my own anymore, so I'm very thankful for that. So I want to give Dan his props. But Donovan, thank you for having me on. It's great to reconnect with you after all these years, and happy to be, again, have this kind of whole thing come full circle and reunite with so many of my friends and colleagues from the Score.
Thanks so much, and welcome to the team. Finally, Aaron Bronstetter. You can find him on Twitter. He's our MMA reporter. His handle is Aaron Bronstetter. Pretty simple. AaronBronstetter. And again, in the bio to this episode, whether you're listening via radio or via podcast, find the podcast, go to the bio and description, find his work right there because it's worth your time. As is Ariel Helwani. So we will make time to talk to him after the break and after a random promo read by my grandparents.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you are listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Clifton and Lucille, Grandma and Granddad, or as my sons call them, GG and G Cliff. They don't know much about the fight game, but they certainly know when it is a big occasion, we're getting it at home. We're getting the pay-per-view. And many Canadians, if they're not in attendance, will be watching from their couch. If you are a Rogers customer, you can just go right into your Ignite. Just ask for UFC 297. You can order it right there, seamless, easy, on our channels, on our platforms, or the Sportsnet Plus or Sportsnet proper. We will have lots of content leading up to the fight. Someone who's going to be covering not just UFC 297, but covering the damn Olympics is Ariel Helwani. So want to catch up with the homie on all things UFC and all things the sports that he really loves. One thing I love about Ariel is his passion. He can be a journalist and a huge, huge lover of sport at the same time. So I want to tap in. Let's listen to and learn from Ariel Helwani. So when we were talking all things mixed martial arts, UFC and Canada, no better person to talk to than Ariel Helwani. But first, we have to give him some love because not only does he cover the MMA scene, he dabbles in some WWEs. The real ones know that he knows himself some basketball. He'll be representing our country, not just with his great coverage of those things. My guy is covering the Olympics for Channel 6, the CBC. Man, when I saw that, it brought a smile to my face. Congrats, and what are you excited about? You already literally working doing that as well.
Yes, well, I appreciate that, and it's great to be back on the show. And I saw your message when the news came out in mid-December, and to have support from the likes of you, who do so great in the Canadian sports media scene, means a lot. Yeah, this is, you know, quite literally a dream come true, because I've never worked for a Canadian outlet before. Of course, I left Canada in 2001 to pursue this American sports broadcasting dream, but I love Canada with all my heart. I still consider myself a Canadian. And to me, as you know, CBC, Olympics, they go hand in hand. I was watching Donovan Bailey in 96 on the CBC. I've been watching, you know, hockey, and I remember watching Steve Nash and the boys in 2000 in Sydney. And I love the Olympics. I love everything about it. And I love this particular one as well, because it feels like the first one in quite some time, you know, where the fans will be there and life will be hopefully back to normal. So it's a huge, huge honor. I'm very excited. And I'm especially excited because it's for a Canadian network as opposed to just doing general coverage.
I love that you mentioned 96, because that was a formative moment in my life. I can remember the call like it was yesterday. Those Saturday nights in Georgia, Donovan goes double gold, back-to-back Saturdays. When you think of being a part of that, I guess it's going to be those Saturday mornings in Paris or Lille, depending on what the contest is. men's basketball, women's basketball, women's soccer, Summer McIntosh in the pool, Andre and Damian and Pierce on the track. What is the one event that you think is going to be the thing that's a showstopper for you?
Without a doubt, basketball. I'd be lying if I didn't say that. And men's basketball in particular, I'm a gigantic basketball fan, as you know, and a gigantic Canadian basketball fan. And I grew up in Montreal, and there was once a time where the only basketball coverage that we got were the last 30 seconds of the nightly sportscast, where they would put, you know, the scores in last night's game. And I was a huge Knicks fan. This is before the Raptors came along. And just to see how far the sport has come in this country is an amazing thing. And then to see the men's basketball team finally break through. I mean, that win over Spain was late August, early September of this past year to punch their ticket is one of the most thrilling sporting events that I've ever witnessed. I mean, I was sweating. I really wanted this, and I really didn't want them to have to qualify in early July. I wanted a full year to prepare and a celebration. And I think that we have a really good chance to medal. And in fact, one of the last sideline games that I ever did for ESPN was Denver at OKC. And this is the Chris Paul Thunder. And I said, Jamal Murray was playing. And I predicted that in the 2020 games, Canada would get a medal in men's basketball. Obviously, they fell short. It ended up being 2021, et cetera, et cetera. So I think I was one Olympic, you know, cycle off. But I really do believe if Jamal plays, and, of course, if we have SGA, we have the best backcourt in the world, and then everyone else. I mean, it's just I get chills just talking about it. I want this so bad, and I want it for the country and for everyone who's been supporting Canadian basketball for all these years.
I will say, though, we're certainly not qualifying, and we're not the nation that we are without Montreal. Go ahead and brag on your homies from the island. Like that, if we were talking about this 20 years ago, this would be like a GTA team and a dude from Victoria. Now, it's really a better representation of the country, but La Belle Province is growing massively in terms of the players they're producing, no?
Yo, when we were growing up, there was one player from Montreal in the NBA, and that was Bill Wennington, who I kind of despised because he played on the Bulls, and the double nickel game, he dunked it in the final second, and I hated that. And let's be honest, he kind of repped St. John's and all that way more than Montreal. And so now to be in this position where you have Lou Dort, you know, repping the Canadiens, and the Thunder are playing in Montreal in a preseason game, and then you've got youngsters like Benedict Mathurin doing great things, and many others. And there's always been this thing where it's like Quebec, for whatever reason, like for some reason they're not on the same page as Canada basketball, and you know the Quebec players get shut out. You can't shut them out anymore, and it's been amazing to see. And one of my dreams, like when I was growing up, we didn't even get, like, there were no Raptors preseason games or anything like that. They never came to the Bell Center. I worked for a website, believe it or not, before my MMA reporting days, called Qball.ca, which is no longer around, which focused on the Quebec basketball scene. And this is like 04, 05, 06. And I would write weekly articles for them. And to see how far it's come and the talent that's coming out of there, playing in D1 schools and then making it to the NBA, first round picks, et cetera. It's an amazing thing. Chris Boucher and all those guys, like, it gives me so much pride that we're included in all of this. And it's not just, as you said, the Ontario boys doing their thing.
Love it. I want to know from you, though, if Michael Bartlett and Rowan Barrett at Canada Basketball, let's give you a call and be like, listen, you know, we've got our summer core. We got that locked. We made a commitment to these guys. But now we've actually qualified, right? Like, you know, yesterday's price isn't today's price. There's some real good ballers. You mentioned Mathurin, who it's not like he couldn't commit. He was in college. Do we augment the team with the best of the best? Do we keep that commitment in terms of the chemistry, the core, the commitment? Where does Ariel Helwani weigh in on what I love has been a debate literally online since they qualified until now, whenever there's Canadians matching up in the NBA?
No, 100%. And there is something to that loyalty, right? Like, I've heard Rowan Barrett say, you know, we want to thank the guys who got us here. And I love that. And that's the way it should be. But also, I mean, there's something to be said for getting them there. And there's something to be said for wanting to win and doing what's best. I mean, look at the American team, right? Those dudes weren't a part of qualifying and whatnot. And now they're all coming to try to save the day. And I say, bring them on, baby. Call up LeBron, call up KD, call up Steph Curry. How are they doing in the NBA season this year? How are they looking? Are they looking a little older? Are those legs looking a little tired? I say, bring them on. Everyone was like, oh, here we go. They're coming to smack Canada. Oh, really? All right, we'll see about that. And so I say, let's load up. We finally have, you know, a talent pool. We could probably go all NBA and all legit NBA studs. And so I get the loyalty, and I love the loyalty, but, you know, this is a new day. And 2024, to me, is the start of a new chapter in Canadian basketball. And, you know, we tend to be nice, and we tend to be, you know, very polite, but I think we have to do what's best for the team and what's best for the country. And if there were guys that weren't a part of it, and I know Jamal is a different one because he was a little bit, and then he got, like, come on, we got to get these guys on board. And not only build for 24, but then for 28, et cetera.
I love the confidence. I love the swag. I love the fact that you're calling out the Americans in the middle of January.
Yeah.
We have like a global ambassador for the Raptors. You know, with Canada basketball, I think we just got to go Superfan Nav Bhatia, Max Kerman from the Arkells, and Ariel Helwani, like just leading us out onto the floor, talking that talk in the media. I think this needs to be a thing. You didn't mention Montreal, and I do actually want to talk to you about UFC, especially with UFC 297 on the way. But this is something that I've struggled with, and I'm uneducated, so that's why I ask people like you. We saw whether it was the Vince Carter effect in the GTA, but really in Canada, the Steve Nash effect, if you will, in terms of inspiration, you know, a flood of people coming afterwards. In terms of the UFC, whether it's in Canada or even specifically in Quebec and Montreal, is there a GSP effect? Like, I haven't noticed it yet. Is there a tangible impact to what he did at the highest level where others say, I see it, I believe it, I'm now going to do the same thing?
That's a fantastic question, because I talk about the Vince Carter effect a lot. There was the Patrick Roy effect as far as Quebec goalies are concerned and the way in which they played back in the day as well. But to be honest, and quite disappointingly, there hasn't been a GSP effect just yet. And maybe we're a little too early because, of course, you know, he last fought in 2017 and was in his prime, you know, 2011, 2012, et cetera. So maybe we're a tad bit early. But I would say the Canadian MMA scene, if there are peaks and valleys and everything, they're kind of in a valley. Now, the good news is it feels like they're coming out of the valley, but I would say that they're still in the valley. It has been not a great time. And while the rest of the world has been catching up, I mean, you see champions from Australia and New Zealand, and Europe is on fire. England is obviously on fire. Ireland, of course. A lot of the other countries that for the longest time had no representation in the UFC. And we had a solid base with the likes of George St. Pierre and Rory McDonald. TriStar was huge as far as gyms are concerned in Canada and Quebec. The lack of local promotions in Canada, meaning promotions that were helping to build up future stars. You know, there used to be a great promotion in Quebec called TKO, and they produced the likes of GSP before they got to the UFC. And there was a great promotion in Alberta called Maximum Fighting Championships, and there was one in Ontario called the Score Fighting Series. A lot of these don't exist. There's Unified MMA, and there's others that are trying to, you know, do their thing as well. But I think the lack of local promotions has really hurt the region, and we haven't seen that influx of young talent. That being said, if you want to support Canadian MMA and you want to see potentially the next wave, this is the card for you. Other than the top three fights, every single fight on this card is Canada versus the world, which I love. And when the UFC was last in Canada in June in Vancouver, Canada went undefeated. I think it was 5-0 or 6-0. And so there's young fighters like Mike Malott, who I would say are leading the way. He's on this card as well. He's on the main card. There are people to get excited about. They're not quite, you know, breaking through any contender status. That's why I say we're just coming out of the valley. But I feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel, as opposed to 2 years ago where I was feeling quite depressed about Canadian MMA because I saw no one coming up.
I love the fact that you mentioned Mike Malott, because I feel like this weekend could be his. If he has a great performance, if he has a great finish, and it's early in highlight shows, it's not at the end, buried after hockey and now basketball and whatever's happening in the NFL, I feel like maybe he can make the transition to become a much more mainstream household name in sports in Canada. Is that just me being optimistic, or do you think the same?
No, I think he's got it all. He's a fun fighter. He's a good-looking fighter. He speaks really well. He's very proud of his Canadian heritage. Like, he does it all. He flies the flag. He's very respectful to the guys of yesteryear. I love talking to him. I love watching him. I love that he's one of ours. And you know what? If I could, and maybe you can't say it, but I could definitely say it, because I've lived it here, and I saw what it was back in the day. I think the UFC coming back to Sportsnet is gigantic for the country. Love the people over at the other sports network. I don't think that they truly invested in the sport, and I don't think they gave it the shine that Sportsnet gave it before the UFC and Sportsnet parted ways. And what I mean by living it, I've seen what ESPN has done for the UFC in Canada, in America. And what I mean by that is when they're in business with the promotion, when they're in business with the sport, you know, it's all over SportsCenter, it's all over the network, it's all over .com. And I remember back in the day when Sportsnet was covering the UFC like that and really putting it on par with the NHL and the NFL, et cetera, MLB. And so to see it come back, I really think that this is going to be huge for the sport, and other people are going to follow suit, and new stars are going to be born. They just hired a great Canadian broadcaster, Aaron Bronstetter, journalist, which I think was a great move on their part. He's been doing great work over there. So I'm really excited about this, because I just felt like they were being buried and not treated as one of the big leagues, the big sports in the world. And the UFC and MMA has never been more popular. And so it's great to see that it's back at the network, which I think helped make it popular in Canada all those years ago.
Well, you worked in this industry a long time at different places. You know what it's like. Sometimes executives need to not try to grow an audience. They need to see an audience in order to invest. All of a sudden, the Raptors are in the finals. They're getting 7 million watching this. Oh, maybe this basketball thing is kind of a big deal, even though it has been for literally decades. In terms of the market in Canada, in terms of UFC interest and viewership, it certainly at one time was part of the reason why the UFC continued to grow. But like, that was the time when fighters were wearing Affliction t-shirts when they got into the ring. Is the amount of rabid interest and fever for the UFC in Canada, do you believe it's been able to maintain at the same level?
No, because you don't have that big face, that star, right? There was once a time, I remember, in GSP's heyday, where Dana White said that GSP was more successful and more popular than Wayne Gretzky. And it was brilliant promoting on his part, because I remember all the Canadian outlets the next day were debating this and talking about it, which, you know, is exactly what he wanted. You can't really say that about anyone right now. You could say that there are maybe future stars, but when the best pound-for-pound fighter in the sport, when the champion for many years and many defenses is Canadian, it just helps. And so going to those shows, like I went to all those fights in Montreal with GSP headlining. They're some of the best and loudest crowds that I've ever experienced. And I was also at UFC 186 when he was long gone, and it was Demetrius Johnson headlining. And it was one of the most depressing crowds that I've ever been to, because the whole upper deck was tarped off. Same arena, same city, but you just don't have that guy. And so right now they don't have that guy. But like I said, I feel like there's some potential guys that could be coming up. You need that person. Look at what UK MMA is going through. They've got Leon Edwards as the welterweight champion. They've got Tom Aspinall. They've got the likes of Paddy Pimblett. Obviously, we saw Irish MMA explode with Conor McGregor flying the flag. You need that face. You need that person who's flying your country's flag. And I will say, the beautiful thing about MMA is you could go to Toronto and have a show headlined by an American and a South African, and no one really bats an eye. And that's great. That's beautiful. You can't do that in boxing and in other sports. But ultimately, for the sport to get to where it once was and beyond, I do believe you need that homegrown star.
We mentioned Dana White and his relationship with his stars. The internet's conversation recently has been about unsealed docs revealing Dana White's reaction to John Jones' money demands. Now, you know what the X app is like. Most people don't click and read the story. They just kind of quote tweet and make a joke. I'm sure you dug much deeper. What jumped out to you?
I mean, honestly, like, so there's this class action lawsuit going on, and we're getting to the point where a lot of the unsealed emails and texts are coming out. And for the most part, and I hate being that guy, I'm just kind of sitting back and saying, I told you all. I was telling you about this for years and years. And people would say, oh, you're being a hater, you're being negative. And no, like Dana White and John Jones never had a great relationship. And it really dates back to when John Jones refused to fight Chael Sonnen on short notice at UFC 151. And they had to cancel the event for the first time in their history. Because they couldn't get a main event because Dan Henderson got injured 10 days before. Ever since then, they have not had the best relationship. Now, he has, you know, had to have his back and defend him and do things of that nature because he, you know, he was a moneymaker. John Jones was a star and he was a champion. So you're seeing these conversations from, I don't know, 2013, 2012, and this is at the height of their relationship being very bad. And so it's, you know, obviously it's kind of wild to see things in black and white, and you feel a little bit weird reading personal text messages and emails. Feels like you shouldn't be doing that, but it's out there and it's legal and it's for public, you know, use and viewing. And so most of the stuff that I'm seeing, if not all, I'm like, yeah, this is what I'm telling you guys. Like they do try to bury fighters. They do try if, you know, if a fighter doesn't want to take their deal to put them on the undercard and have them fight someone tough to hurt their stock. Like they've been doing this as recently as what they did to Nate Diaz a year and a half or so ago. So it's the same old. There's a lot to love and to celebrate about the UFC. But as far as business is concerned, they're tough. And they got this far because of the fact that they're so tough and because they had this stranglehold on the industry. And so John knows this. John knows about the relationship. Dana knows, obviously, as well. Some of the fans who have been paying attention know, and maybe now most of the fans know.
It's funny when you are at odds with someone, when you have you know, legal issues with someone, but also when it works in both people's best interests to work together, sometimes you find a way. That would be the Raptors and the Knicks, Ariel, who have a lawsuit ongoing, but also made a trade that, for the first time in the history of Raptors and Knicks dealings, seems to be win-win on both sides. What was this like for you, the team of your country, but the team of your heart? Is this like, you know, mom and dad got a divorce and they're fighting? How did you, I guess you're cheering for the same guys in different uniforms, but what did you make of the move?
Okay, so I have many emotions and feelings. First, I would like to address the revisionist history. Everyone loves to say that the Raptors always rip off the Knicks. First of all, let me remind you that they made a trade in the late 90s before the 99 season. Charles Oakley, which broke my heart. I love Charles Oakley, my second favorite Knick of all time behind Patrick Ewing, to the Raptors for Marcus Camby. How did that work out? We got Marcus Camby, whose stock was pretty low and at the time was a bit of a head-scratcher, number two pick, and he took us to the finals. We don't make the finals in 99 without Marcus Camby, especially with Patrick Ewing getting hurt. And I would say Charles Oakley worked out pretty well for the Raptors as well. He was a huge part of that team with Vince and whatnot, made that run against Philly and all that stuff. And so I would say that worked out pretty well for the both of us. Everyone loves to bring up the Bargnani deal. That was a stinker. But I would also say that you guys owe the Knicks a big thank you, and in particular James Dolan, because if he didn't nix the Kyle Lowry deal, you guys don't probably win the championship in 2019. So it's all been very symbiotic. That being said, I was very sad to see Emmanuel quickly go, because, and I'm very happy to see him playing well, because I felt like he didn't quite reach his potential. And obviously Jalen Brunson coming along, and I love Jalen, and I would not trade him for anyone on the planet. It just felt like he couldn't quite get to that next level. And so something had to give. He wanted a big deal. And, you know, this happens in sports all the time with the backup. You just have to, you know, cut ties. RJ, mixed feelings, thrilled for him that he's going home. I do think he will thrive at home. It feels like a great story. It's great for Canadian basketball as we head into 24 and all the stuff we talked about. And again, he was one of our own. And he was part of that draft where we were trying to get Zion or Ja. And we ended up with him, and it was great. And he had some great moments. But again, it never quite felt like he got over the hump. I've always loved OG. I love his demeanor. I love his interactions with Serge Ibaka. I love that shot against Boston in the bubble. He seems like a New York kind of guy, and boy, he has fit in like a glove. He's been fantastic, and 100% I agree with you. One of those rare deals that seem to have worked out perfectly for both teams. Even Precious doing well. Malachi getting some run recently. Very reminiscent of the recent deal between the Pacers and the Kings, which initially, you know, I thought was a bit of a weird one, and now seems to be working out quite well for both teams. Probably in the end will work out better for the Pacers, I would imagine. But I would take Domantas Sabonis on my team, and obviously Halliburton's doing great. So, yeah, it's working out very well. I wonder if the Knicks have one more move left in them before the deadline, but this is fun. And, look, there's a lot of teams in New York, and there's sometimes obviously multiple teams. The Nets don't exist around here. When the Knicks are on fire, there is no team that unifies this city more so than the Knicks, better than the Knicks. Everyone gets on board. Everyone loves it. Everyone's in a good mood. So I'm praying for a run. All I want is a Knicks championship and a Bills Super Bowl in my lifetime. Just one. I don't want a dynasty. I just want one, and I will die a happy man.
Well, let's head up to Western New York, where you are not driving to shovel snow, but you will be watching. Before I let you go, I just need a vibe check of the overall seasons of Les Habitants, the Montreal Canadiens, and the Buffalo Bills. In your spirit, in your heart, how are you feeling? Because people have called for changes of both, even though they're on different ends of the standing. So where are you in terms of the current status of the franchises that you love so much?
Okay, so I feel great about the Bills. The win in Miami in Week 18 changed everything. You lose that game. Obviously, you don't win the AFC East, and obviously, you don't win the second seed. But you win that, and then you have to go back to Miami on the road and play them. And I didn't want that. Win that game. Now you're hosting two playoff games, and then who knows what happens in the AFC Championship? I believe in Josh. I love Josh. The defense has been great. I was definitely one of those people who was saying Sean McDermott, this might be it. What he's done with the defense this year, especially after losing the likes of Trey White and Matt Milano, has been fantastic. The move to bring in Joe Brady as interim offensive coordinator has been fantastic. The run game is alive. James Cook is cooking. I feel good. I feel really, really good. I don't want to be, you know, a braggadocious Bills fan. I don't want to be cocky Bills fan, but I feel good, and I feel like there's a path there. And, you know, Miami's out. Dallas is out. These teams that I was a little bit worried about at some point or another, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling very, very good. And it's because of that Week 18 win. If they don't win that game, everything changes. As for the Habs, it feels like, you know, they're still in this rebuilding phase, maybe doing a little bit better than I thought, just a teensy bit. But for the most part, and I don't know if they're a playoff team. Maybe they sneak in at the very end in the back door. You know, they've had some nice moments, some ups and downs, but they're very young and they're very inexperienced. They've obviously got some guys to be excited about. I like Caulfield, Suzuki, all these guys. They're fine, but it definitely doesn't feel like they're real players in the Eastern Conference. That's okay. I'm still buzzing over that run in 2021. That was improbable and fun. And so, you know, I could give them, you know, a bit of a longer leash over the next couple of years.
Well, you love Josh Allen. We love you. Thank you for taking the time. Enjoy 297. You've been able to cover at a high level without being in the building. So whether you are coming north or not, enjoy 297 and enjoy everything you've got going on leading up to what's going to be a pretty fun summer with you covering the Olympics.
Thanks, my man. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me. Go Bills.
So good to catch up with him. I just want, in our industry, good things for good people who do good work. And he certainly is that, which is why he's doing great work for so many different people. The MMA Hour, Vox Media, the MMA Show. You can find him doing stuff with Spotify, CBC, TNT Sports, BetMGM, and Real Sports. That's a lot of checks for my guy. But he checks all the boxes in terms of someone who covers the sport thoroughly, but also makes it fun. We had a lot of fun talking to Ariel Helwani. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Please give him a follow if you aren't already, and 1.3 million of you are. At Ariel Helwani is the handle on X, A-R-I-E-L-H-E-L-W-A-N-I. Make sure if you're on your phone, you are liking, listening to, thank you for making it this far, favoriting, subscribing, and five-starring our content on the various platforms you intersect with it. And looking forward to continuing these conversations about the UFC with you, because as I mentioned off the top, Sportsnet is the Canadian home to UFC, and we are going to do our best to cover it in a real authentic way and go deep. Thanks for listening.